We'll start with, if you see on your the first sheet, the front page, we'll start with a couple of prayers to the Buddha, our historical Buddha, the Shakyamuni Buddha, and then the four immeasurables. Sayata mune mune maha munaye soha. Sayata mune mune maha munaye soha. Sayata sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends, hatred for enemies. And then in Tibetan, Sem Chen Tam Te De Wa Da Ne We Gyu Dang Den Par Gyu Ching Du. What have you got? Oh. So Susan has an announcement.
It is. Wait till you hear it.
You want the microphone?
No, it's okay.
So we'll start with, Geshe-la, when he's here, he always starts with a meditation that helps us calm, or helps us bring calmness to our mind. And the way it does that is by balancing the energies in our body and mind stream. And there's a long treatise on that, so we won't go into that, how it does it. But nevertheless, it's a very profound meditation, actually, even though it seems very simple. So it's the 9-round breathing. Those of you who know how to do it, of course, how to do it. Those of you who don't, it's basically very simple. You start with your left hand, you close your right nostril, you breathe through your left, and then out through your right, 3 times, like that. Then you use your right hand, close off your left nostril, breathe through your right, out through your left, 3 times, like that. And then, finally, you breathe through both nostrils and out. And, yes, if that's too complicated, which I can understand, you can follow His Holiness the Dalai Lama's advice, which is you breathe 3 times in and out through your nose, both nostrils. So you can do 9-round breathing or the His Holiness's approach, whichever you prefer. But it helps with balancing the energies in our mind stream and in our body. So we'll start. And we breathe deeply into our base of our tummy. It's, you should feel it going in and out. So I was thinking that, when they asked me to lead today's session, I was thinking, what should I talk about, or what should we, think about, right? And I was thinking I will try something that's difficult for me, right? And I expect it's difficult for you as well. And that is this idea of loving kindness for all beings. And, those of you who've been coming, it's called bodhicitta, this incredibly vast mind. That's not just love, but all the love is necessary, right? But it's not sufficient. It's love, but it's imbued with this idea of great compassion they talk about, right? Great compassion. So before we go there, what does great compassion mean? We have to understand, how we lead our lives, Right? I mean, that's what the Buddha talked about in his Four Noble Truths. And, you know, and then also, how the causes and conditions come about, right? How results are due to causes that we create. And so one thing we need to remember is that the reason that we have a human life in this life, if you believe in rebirths and reincarnation, etc., they say that this life is not an accident, right? In fact, you can, even if you're not part of the Buddhist faith, don't believe in rebirths, and so forth and so on, you can do this academic exercise, which is how I started many years ago when I was thinking about this. If you think about how many human beings there are in Raleigh, let's say we're in Raleigh. I live in Chapel Hill, so I usually use Carborough. I use the Carborough, you know, but I'm in Raleigh now. So in Raleigh, you know, I don't know, how many are there? 500,000 people? 800,000 people? Something like that, let's say, right? You know, there's probably 500,000, 800,000 beings just within one square mile of us. Right? If you think of all the animals and insects, right? Which are all also beings, right? Maybe more. I expect there's more. So just in Raleigh, I expect, you know, there's billions. Maybe more. Trillions, I don't know. Beings, right? So if you think about the 800,000 people and the billions of beings, you do the math, you realize how rare it really is, right? I mean, the question becomes, why is it that we're born a human being? And then, you know, there's various meditations and various different, you know, analyses one can do, and in the Buddhist path, the only alternative that they come up with is that we must have had many lives in the past. We must have created many, many good, we must have committed many, many virtuous actions, right, of body, speech, and mind. We must have done incredibly good things. We weren't born a human being by accident, a body and a mind with which we can attain the highest goals, right, which are not available to animals, which are not available to insects. I mean, they can do certain things, right? They can do virtuous actions too. And, you know, an animal that takes care of its young, or animals that, you know, anyway, you understand what I mean. So it's not that they can't do it, but we have this incredible capacity, right, to discriminate, to plan, to make, you know, to make judgments and, you know, so forth and so on. So we've done very many, 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 many great things to be able to be born a human being with an interest in a spiritual path, maybe even interest in the Dharma, in the Buddhist path, so forth and so on, right? Whatever spiritual path we're on, it's still a valid path, right? Most likely. So that's an amazing, great thing, right? To be able to be interested in that and to have the imprints to be able to do those things. But conversely, we've also created many, many negative imprints in our minds, which are the causes for whatever problems we have in our lives today. Right, so it's not like anybody's trying to punish us. That's not in the Buddhist path. We don't. There is no God or there is no being that will punish us. It's basically considered it's like a universal law, right? Like gravity. If it goes up, it must come down. So like that, causes and conditions also is like the universal law. You do good things happen to you. You do bad things happen to you. So that's how it's considered, right? And that's. Buddhists believe that's true for all beings, whether they consider themselves Buddhist or not. You know, that's how it is. And so whatever disappointments, physical issues, mental issues, you know, problems in our lives, problems with our families, problems at work, problems, whatever it is that we have, Each of us has something going on, right? Or many things going on, actually. Though we have to understand that those are due to things that we have done ourselves, right? And also what that means is actions that we commit today, actions of body, speech, and mind, all, you know, not just physical actions, actions of body, speech, and mind, also will have repercussions in the future. So if we understand that, and if we understand how we are, we realize that, you know, it's... So once we understand our own set of issues that we struggle with, and we understand why it is that we have these sets of issues, we also then understand that other people have the same set of issues, maybe in a slightly different way, you know, maybe, you know, whatever, right? Maybe in a slightly different way, but they still have very similar sets of issues. And so we have this great compassion for them that they must suffer a lot too. We're not the only ones. And once we have that understanding, then we go to one next step, is that, you know, we want the ultimate happiness for ourselves. That's why we're on the spiritual path, right? I mean, on the spirit, you know, what does ultimate happiness mean? You know, if you've studied the Lamrim and the texts and so forth and so on, they say that, you know, there are people of small scope, there's people of medium scope, and that there's people of the great scope, right? The people of small scope are people who want happiness in future lives, right? So they are thinking about their actions and, you know, virtue and non-virtue and so forth and so on. So they're thinking about future lives. The people who are of medium scope, they're thinking about liberation, how to remove suffering forever for themselves, right? Or to gain liberation. And people of great scope are the ones who think about this idea of liberation for oneself, but not for oneself alone. It's liberation and enlightenment for all beings, right? So I will attain enlightenment not just for myself alone, but because I understand that everybody suffers the same way I do, how can I possibly only want it for myself? Right? How can I possibly... So I will take the responsibility to not only help myself, but I must help others. Right? So that's the great compassion. Right? And so the interesting thing, if you notice in there, by the way, the small scope, medium scope, great scope, it starts with this wanting, you know, happiness. Small scope is happiness in future lives, right? If you want happiness in this life, it's not considered a spiritual path. Right? I mean, in other words, if we are only looking for mundane happiness, you know, happiness that comes from gaining wealth, happiness that just comes from, you know, ordinary things, they say, right? Those are not considered spiritual happiness. You know, they're not considered part of the spiritual path, right? We need some of those. We need money because we need to live, right? Because if we don't live, we cannot be of any service, right? We need to eat because we need to nourish ourselves so that we can be of benefit to others. But if we live, if we want to attain only money for money's sake, then that's not a spiritual path, right? So that's the idea. So the ultimate happiness is wanting enlightenment, but not just for oneself alone. Because, you know, so ultimate happiness certainly is liberation, which is, you know, everybody who does anything, whether with our thoughts, whether through our actions, when we speak, or whether through, you know, actions of body, through our, you know, generosity and so forth and so on, you know, everything that each of us does, each being, each animal, each person does, is because he or she or it thinks it's going to bring happiness to them. Every action, no matter how good and no matter how bad, if you think about it, we're doing it because we think it's going to bring us happiness. We don't realize that it brings us temporary happiness, the happiness that will go away. It's not permanent. It can't last, right? So we get a raise, we get really happy, you know, because we feel good about ourselves. But then after a while, you realize that our spending rises too, somehow. And somehow that raise no longer seems to bring us the happiness that we thought it was going to, right? Or whatever it is. You can use your own examples, right? So, you know, and they use the, you know, Gesserle uses the idea of whatever, what is it, Papa John's pizza, right? So, you know, you eat and you feel happy for a while, but then you're full and then you're not so happy after a while, you know? So it's like that. Everything that we do has these ups and downs, right? So happiness basically is a temporary relief from unhappiness. That's really what it is. You know, it's kind of just, for a while, we feel somewhat content, and then we're on the next step down, and we're looking for the next thing that's going to bring us back to the high again. Right? That's really what how our actions go from one thing to the next. Right? We're looking for these ups and downs. So the idea of liberation is that we no longer go through these ups and downs. We are in a permanent state of happiness. And so that's what the Buddhist path is about. How to gain permanent happiness, right? And, you know, there are many, you know, there's practices, you know, you study, you practice, for example, the six perfections to bring us happiness, right? There's generosity, ethical behavior, patience, you know, joyful effort, you know, to continue to practice, to continue to do things even on, you know, under when we're not feeling okay or not feeling well or when we make mistakes. And then there's wisdom. And finally, there's compassion, right? So there are many trainings like that to get us to, you know, to ultimate happiness. But then the question is, how can I want it only for myself alone, right? And so I thought that, okay, we could talk about this love that's so vast. You know, I like a lot of the sacred music in the Catholic faith, right? And so I was listening to one this morning, and it was from a Latin translation, and it said, God's mercy is wide, right? And so I was thinking, you know, that's very interesting. It's a lot like the Bodhisattva love, right? The love of, you know, it has no bounds. It's wide. It's expansive. You know, they don't love the Buddha's love, right? Or the Bodhisattva's love is their love for their mother is no different than their love for the next person. You know, they love each person the exact same way. They see, you know, if you read the, you know, what the Buddhas are like, you know, what their qualities are like, they see the Buddhas see everyone as attractive. Not physically attractive, but they see the inner beauty, right? That attractiveness. They see every being, no matter how, you know, what they do, what they, you know, what they're like, the other people see them as, right? The Buddhas see them in their true inner beauty. And that's the love, and they want the best for every single being, right? And that's the love, that's the expansive love, wide as God's mercy, right? And that's the love that each of us, they tell us, our teachers tell us, Geshe-la tells us, Lama Zopa Rinpoche tells us, His Holiness Dalai Lama, you know, every teacher in the Buddhist path will say, so that's the kind of love that we want to cultivate. And so that's the bodhicitta mind, you know, this incredible loving mind that's always thinking about benefiting others. you know, their actions are always, so that's the action that's always has pure intention behind it. Right? Most of our actions, you know, they you know, our minds are clouded at the moment. We have ordinary minds, right? They say that each of us has the Buddha nature. Sooner or later, we will be enlightened. Each one of us, actually, right? Each one of us has the Buddha potential. Each one of us will become enlightened one day. Some of us a little bit faster than others, you know, but each of one will be. Each one of us has the Buddha nature. And so, but right now, that Buddha nature, it's clouded, right? It's kind of like they say, you know, you have the sky, but there are clouds. You can't see the sky, but that doesn't mean that the sky isn't there, right? That's like the Buddha nature for us, right? So our actions today are not governed by pure intention because we have this clouded mind, right? And so we have to, and the way we, and our actions are always governed by attachment and aversion, right? Attachment is wanting things we like, and aversion is not wanting things we don't like. So if you think about each one of us, if we think about our own actions of body, speech, and mind, that's pretty much what we do, say, or think every single moment or every single day. If we actually analyze it, we'll see that it's basically because we want something we like or we don't want something we don't like. But if we're able to change that, because our minds are changeable, right? We can tame it. If we're able to change that and we can think about how we can be of service, of being of use, right? If we can find a meaning in our lives in that way, then we can transform our lives, right? That's the idea. You know, we transform our mind, and through that we transform our lives. And we can transform our lives forever, really, at the end of it. So I thought that, so what I wanted to do was, and I don't know how much time I'll have, but I wanted to, I have a translation of a commentary by this famous Nyingma master, those of you who know Nyingma and Gelugpa, etc., Patrul Rinpoche from the 19th century, and he had this amazing commentary on Shantideva's, you know, Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. And so I studied this text because I find it very useful, and because when I first started Buddhism, I actually started in the Nyingma tradition. My first teacher was a Nyingma teacher. So I thought that we would, you know, talk about, you know, one of the things that stops us from having this or trying to strive for this loving mind is not understanding the benefits of it, right? And the first chapter of Shantideva's text is exactly that, you know, why we should have this type of mind. What is the benefit of this type of mind? And the other thing, so we can talk about that. The other thing I wanted to do was know how to generate that mind, right? Because it's easy to talk about it and think about it, but it's hard to generate it, right? So how can we train our minds if we had the inclination, what can we do? What type of meditation can we do that will help us to, you know, train our minds in that, in bodhicitta, right? So I have, one of my teachers is Venerable Rene Fuchsy, who's a Swiss monk who was here, a couple of months ago. Some of you have met him. And so, you know, I go to, he's truly realized this mind. And so he leads retreats on these types of things. And so I have a meditation by him. So I thought it would be much better if it came from him. and if it came from me. So I thought that we'd start with generating that type of love, right? We'll just do a meditation for 5 minutes, not very long. And Chris, if you could start the tape, please. And, you know, so we can start by just doing some...
So on the base of breathing as before, inhale gently, you feel the lung from the bottom up. Exhale. So on that base, you bring to your mind people that you hold dear. So people you're naturally close to, could be your partner, your children, your pets, or your teachers. And you hold them there for a little while. And you try to generate a warm heart. See, by holding these dear people in your mind, there's a warmth arising in your heart. So part of the mind is focusing on the breath, on the breathing. Part of the mind brings forth these images. So you can make like a slideshow. You hold these dear people for a while in your mind, and you let the warmth, the loving care, the tenderness arise in your heart. And then you hold this tenderness, this warmth in your heart as your object of concentration. In the background, there's still the breath, and there's the slideshow or the small videos, small snapshots of people that are dear to you, or animals, or situation. And these generate a warmth in your heart, a tenderness. Then you hold this warmth and tenderness in your heart as your object of concentration. So you have to see how much you have to involve yourself with the slideshow. After a while, you can stay just on the tenderness in your heart. And you can hold maybe just one image. Or maybe you don't even need image anymore. You can just focus on the tenderness in your heart, that warmth, that loving care. I do that for 20 minutes.
since we've generated that tenderness and warm heart. So we feel that love that's in our heart, that we're capable of it. So we send that we send that love to ourselves. We're capable of reaching the highest potential. We make mistakes. But we can continue. We can try to do better next time. We can forgive ourselves. That we want to gain the ultimate happiness, that we truly remove or truly remove our problems that we deal with, our disappointments, our expectations that we can't achieve. And all kinds of other mental and physical issues that we may deal with, so that we may find the ultimate happiness for ourselves. So we send that love to us. And then we imagine all those others we love, our partners, our children, our friends, our relatives. They're all around us. And we send this love to them. May they find the same happiness that we're looking for. May they conquer whatever problems that they are having. Not just in this life, but in all future lives. And we imagine all the people we're indifferent to. People who we meet on the street, people maybe in our neighborhood who we see come and go, but we don't really, maybe they live a few houses down, so we don't really talk to them all that much. We know they exist, but that's about it. People at the hallway at work, maybe they work in a different group or whatever, and we see them, but that's about it. So people like that, which is the vast majority of people in this world. So imagine all of them arrayed around us. And we send the same love to them. May they find happiness in this life and all future lives. May they remove all their suffering at the root, which is because of attachment aversion. So they may they rise above attachment and aversion. May they all strive to be benefit to others. So like that. And finally, imagine around us are all the people we don't like. Maybe we dislike them greatly. Maybe they're even our enemies. So, they've probably done, some grievous things to us. Maybe they've committed some grievous harm. Maybe we just like them just because they annoy us, whatever it is. They're also just like us, same set of issues. They also want happiness, but they have clouded judgments just like we do. So if we can, we try to send the same love to them. May they find happiness in this and all future lives. May they realize their Buddha potential that they also have. May they think about benefiting others. It's kind of easy, isn't it, till we get to the last part. Well, maybe it's not easy. Actually, it wasn't easy for me, but I have a hard time on all of the parts, really. But it's not something that comes naturally to me. I have a lot easier time with other topics and other meditations and other things in the Buddhist path than I do with compassion, or at least this type of, great compassion. And I was thinking about it one day, and why is that, And I think it partly, I don't know about you, but I think for me it's, it just feels so far away, in a way. It feels almost unachievable. I can barely do what I can for myself. How could I possibly take on the responsibility of helping all other beings, right? I think that's the thing that's probably the biggest obstacle for me and maybe for you as well. I know for some of you it's like that too because I've spoken to you. But I think and every single teaching we go to, you know, if you go into Geshe-la's teachings or Lama Zopa Rinpoche's teachings or His Holiness Dalai Lama's teachings or any Buddhist teaching, any Buddhist practice, any puja, anything that's even Buddhist related that I can think of that we engage in, you will see that they have those four lines of the four immeasurables, you know, which is basically what we're talking about. May all beings, you know, have equanimity, free from attachment, aversion. May they be free of suffering, cause of suffering. May they have a happiness, the cause of happiness. May they have good rebirth and the bliss of liberation, right? Those four lines. Those are in every single teaching, puja, you know, ceremony, practice, whatever it is, in the beginning, always. Every single one of them. You won't find one that doesn't have those four lines in it, in some form or fashion. And the reason is that, you know, that's the basis of the Buddhist path. You know, I mean, they say that if, you know, you can do the highest practices, you know, you can do all those initiations and so forth and so on, all that stuff, right? But if you don't have that compassion, that great compassion, then it's only mouthing the words. I mean, it does some good, but it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really help that much. And so the idea is that, you know, but what they're not expecting. I think that the trap that we fall into, or the trap that I fall into, or have fallen into, is that we think that we have to have this great compassion right now, right? What they mean is that we have to continue to think like that, even if we can't practice like that. You know, if we are thinking about being of benefit, even if we are not able to take the responsibility for others' enlightenment and we barely can even do that for ourselves, if we just think like that, it creates the imprints in our minds, right? That's the bodhicitta. You know, they talk about bodhicitta in action and bodhicitta in intention, right? So the bodhicitta in intention is this idea that we have this intention. We're babies on the path. We may not be able to do much about it. We don't know how to really put it into practice, right? Because our minds are clouded, right? We may have the best of intentions, as you know, as each of you probably and I have done, we may have the best of intentions, but somehow we just, our best efforts with the best of intentions sometimes don't meet it doesn't achieve the result that we think it's going to achieve, right? It falls flat. We fall flat quite often, even with the best of intentions. And that's because, you know, our minds, we don't have the, you know, we still have ordinary minds. We don't have the bodhisattva or the Buddha mind, right? Not yet, at least. And so, but what we want to do is we want to create the intention, right? We want to create the imprints in our minds so that we continue to work on the spiritual path. As we talked about earlier, right, the reason we are interested in the spiritual path today is because of our actions in the past, right? So if we create imprints for having a compassionate mind today, we will sooner or later have a compassionate mind in the future because we will continue to practice in that way, right? And so that's where we kind of get hung up, is that, you know, we feel it's far away because we think that we have to achieve it right now. But, you know, we have endless lives to actually accomplish it. That's the best part of it, right? We don't get just one chance at it. We get many chances. But we have to continue to think like that, right? I mean, What is it they say? What is that? I don't know. Yeah, fake it till you make it. Thank you. That's it. Jill Marie and I are channeling each other here. So, yes, you fake it till you make it. It's really, you know, it's interesting, but it's definitely the Buddhist way to do it. You know, you basically pretend, you keep saying it to yourself, and just keeping that intention out there. And we will sooner or later, I mean, that's what the Buddhas have said. You will sooner or later make it. Because somehow, after the, you know, you just have to keep putting one step forward. And it is achievable because we see people, you know, if you see, actually, you will see, if you are here in May or June sometime next year, April or May maybe, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, whose picture is up there on the top right next to His Holiness, you know, you see him with His Holiness. So Lama Zopa Rinpoche, if you are here in April or May, and he usually comes here for, you know, for at least one day, and he leads a retreat in Asheville for 2 weeks, but he's here for a day at least. And during, you know, if you are here, then you will see a person who, or a physical being who is the embodiment of this mind that we're talking about. He lives, breathes, acts every single moment of every single day. Basically, with that bodhicitta mind, that vast mind that we're talking about. So we see if we are curious, we will see people who are like that. And there are many beings like that. We just don't know who they are. You know what I mean? They're all around us. We just don't actually notice it. You know what I mean? You hear about them every once in a while. You know, I mean, there's of course the classic ones like Mother Teresa, you know, and so forth, and who must have been a great bodhisattva, right? You don't have to be Buddhist, by the way, to be a bodhisattva. Anybody who has that expansive mind, the mind that only wants to benefit others, is a bodhisattva. So it's achievable, you know. There are people, or you know, so we don't have to feel that it's something that we can't achieve, which is one great stumbling block. And, you know, we also have to find out what is the benefit of this type of mind. You know, I mean, and it says in here, it says, you know, there are the three main benefits of bodhicitta, right? It says it causes one to attain Buddhahood, which we kind of talked about, which is like, you know, to become a Buddha, one, this is the basis of it, right? One has to have this type of love and compassion. I guess it kind of goes hand in hand. It's like, you know, it's a requisite to become a Buddha, but on the other hand, a Buddha is just naturally like that. You know, it's one of those things, you know, as one grows, I guess, towards Buddhahood, one just gains this type of mind. You know, so it causes one to attain Buddhahood, it says. It increases virtue. Right? So, you know, if we have this type of mind, if we have a mind of benefit to others, one doesn't create non-virtue. Why does one create non-virtue? Because we're thinking about ourselves. Attachment and aversion, right? Because we don't have pure intention. Pure intention is the definition is to, you know, it's for the benefit of others, right? So when we think about ourselves alone is when we create non-virtue. So if we have pure intention, we create virtue. So, I mean, you know, it's pretty simple like that. It increases virtue, it says. You know, so if we have this type of mind, if we're thinking about others, we will continue to always create virtue. Just like we have created in the past to become reborn as a human in this life and so forth and so on, we will continue to create virtue so we have human lives in the future, so we can meet the teachings, be on the spiritual path, continue to grow, continue to meet our teachers, you know, because that's not all guaranteed, right? If we, you know, as we said, you know, 800,000 humans in Raleigh, but there's trillions and however many others, right, around us. So it's not guaranteed that we're born a human being in the however many lives, unless we create the causes for it. And to cause us to create virtue, right? And finally, it purifies non-virtue. So, you know, just because we have committed negative actions in the past doesn't necessarily mean that the results will ripen in the future. We can purify non-virtue by making amends, right? That's basically what purification is, right? So there's various practices one does and so forth and so on. But the basic basis is that, you know, you make amends. And so if we do that, then we purify whatever non-virtue we've created in the past. And that's, you know, if you increase your virtue and you reduce your non-virtue, it's kind of like one of those things where you're on this virtuous, your virtuous cycle. you're on a virtuous cycle, right? You just continue to, it just becomes natural. It becomes automatic. It becomes effortless, they say. You know, it becomes effortless. And just good things just happen. Good things come. You know, we have good lives, we have good partners, we have good work situations, we have good families, we have good whatever it is, you know. It just happens like that, you know. But we have to recognize why we... But we have to recognize, we spoke earlier, we have to recognize why our lives are the way they are. Why do we have mental and physical pain, right? It's because of causes and conditions. Those are due to causes. If we remove the causes, those results also go away. You know, just like a seed by itself is not going to grow a flower, right? A seed has the potential. You know, the cause is there for a flower, but it won't grow unless, you know, right, all the conditions are there. That's how it ripens, right? So just like that. So if we don't create, you know, so it causes one to attain Buddhahood, it increases virtue, and it purifies non-virtue. And that's, you know, that's the basis of the path. You can't ask for anything more, actually. Because if we do that, then we pretty much are, you know, as they say, we're on this cycle of goodness, you know, of being able to continue from life to life, being of benefit not just to ourselves, but also to others, and we continue to practice on the spiritual path, and we have this expansive mind, and you know, it says, for example, here, you know, it says, if one engenders the compassionate wish to soothe with medicines, for example, the aching heads of just a few people, this altruistic wish, you know, the great compassion, this altruistic wish, even if it is ineffective, is productive of unbounded merit. Right? So just that intention, even if we are not able to actualize it through our efforts, right? Just that intention, the altruistic wish is productive of unbounded merit. It says, what need is there to speak then of the boundless merit of the bodhisattvas? They wish to remove the endless misery in this and future lives of all beings who are as numerous as the sky is vast, bringing them immeasurable excellence both in the immediate term and in the ultimate level. So, so that's the kind of mind that we're talking about, you know, and we have to kind of know why we're doing it, right? We have to know about what this mind generates. Why do we, you know, so that we continue, you know, why it's important to practice this type of this. And finally, I'll end because I'm told that I'm at the end. It's important to know that we may not always succeed, right? Even our best efforts, you know, because we're human beings, right? That we will fail, you know, many times, and that we have to make our best effort, right? And so it says at the end here, it says, it is said in the sutras, moreover, that in the age of decadence, which is supposedly what we're in, the degenerate age, they say, right? That bodhisattvas may make mistakes when they relate with other people. It is therefore important not to dwell on the faults of others, but to train in pure perception of them. Even if bodhisattvas do have faults, they will nevertheless become Buddhas. Their faults, after all, are due to causes and conditions, and will consequently be worn away by the dint of practicing the path. Right? So, by creating virtue, by purifying non-virtue, so like that, it will, you know, all our faults will be removed by the practicing the path. It says nobody becomes enlightened by being faultless from the beginning. It is therefore said that to avoid dwelling on the defects and faults of others is a most important pith instruction. Most important pith instruction. So like that. So if you're interested, you can read the first chapter first chapter of Shantideva's text, which outlines all of this. And there are many great commentaries and so forth and so on. You know, His Holiness Dalai Lama has a commentary called Flash of Lightning in the Dark of Night, and Vipam Rinpoche has one. There's many others, you know, so you can read it. Oh, speaking of fire ants, there's one. Okay, so we'll end with our dedication prayers. So if you go to the pink sheet, the dedication verses from Master Shantideva's guide, which is the first chapter I was talking about. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of their merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with the mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those who are worn with toil be restored and finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food, the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and the bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. And may the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then, may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion. To the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatare, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama, ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunath's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels. Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And finally, we'll do 7 green Tara mantra for Geshe-la, our teacher's long, happy life. May he be with us for as long as he continues to guide us and for all of us. Om Tare Tu Re Tu Re So Ha Om Tare Tu Tare.